good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is 17 minutes past the hour on this Thursday, April the 13th, 2017. I am Scott Spears, back with you on the Now program, and this is going to be a fun hour. Tonight at The Ohio State University in the Morrill Hall Auditorium, there is going to be a great show you are certain not to want to miss. Tied up in knots, Karen Knotts, the daughter of legendary Emmy-winning actor Don Knotts, will perform this program dedicated to the memory of her late father, who's been gone about 10 years now, 11 years. Hard to believe that Don passed away in 2006. 7:30 tonight. Doors open at 7 p.m. Tickets are $10 general admission, $9 for seniors, 60 years of age and up, $4 for students, grades K through 12, and if you are a current college student, that also applies to you. We are so very happy to welcome to the studio today Karen Knotts. Karen, how are you?
Hi, Scott. I'm fine. Glad to be here.
Yes, it's great to have you in studio. This show, where did the idea for this show come about?
Well, I was sort of working on this for a while with my dad, actually. And when he passed away, it was rather sudden. We weren't expecting that. And I just decided to get to work right away because there were all these stories that he had told as we were kids growing up. And then I realized at a certain point he wasn't telling the stories anymore. And I thought, I've got to start doing this because, you know, all my life people have asked me, well, what's your father like? And all those questions. And I thought, well, this is a perfect opportunity to do a show and answer the questions. So that's how it really started, and plus I'm a performer myself, an entertainer, and love to perform. So it's really been a lot of fun as well as a great experience.
If people come out tonight, what should they expect?
Well, I talk about my father's childhood, what his influences were, a little, you know, what makes him tick, and how he got his career started. He just grew up in this very poor family in West Virginia. And I think from the moment he was born, sort of had this agenda that he was going to make it. And everything he did was to that end. And he had this lovely West Virginia life, all these colorful characters. And then when he met Andy Griffith, they shared that. They both came from this sort of rural backgrounds with these amazing, funny characters. And so I talk about that. I talk about how he met Griffith and how he got on the Andy Griffith Show, some behind-the-scenes stories, because I was on the set as a child and what that was like. And then I talk about our relationship, our father-daughter relationship. So it's got a lot to it.
What was the relationship between Andy and Don?
Oh, they were extremely close friends, like soulmates in a way. You know, they were just so understood each other. They were very different as people, but creatively, they so connected. And they just loved each other. It was real, true friendship, and they just really created this whole world between them.
At one point, I think I read somewhere that your father had asked Andy to be part of a comedy team.
Well, I'm not sure about that, but they did have. I'm not sure about that, but they did have a project that they wanted to do, which never came to fruition, and that was about two preachers that traveled across country during the Depression. And that was something they both wanted to do, and somehow they just never made that happen.
Don Knotts' popularity, for people who were not living during that time, what would you equate it to at the height of the Andy Griffith Show and his movies? I mean, did people just come up to him everywhere? Was he mobbed when he would go outside?
Yeah, pretty much. I remember he finally agreed to take us kids to Disneyland, and he would heavily costumed with the sunglasses and the hat and everything. And he didn't like to be mobbed, but he didn't mind when people would come up to him one at a time, like if we were in a restaurant or something like that. He loved people and he loved being recognized, but he did not like being mobbed. He was very uncomfortable about that. But yes, he was very, very much recognized. And then kind of after that, not so much. But then when he got on Three's Company, once again, he was recognized and people would come up to him on the street. And this time it was a different generation of folks.
When you were growing up, father-daughter relationships are interesting. What was he like as a father?
Oh, gosh, it's hard to say. He was a complex dad. He was everything. I mean, above all, I think of him as my best friend because I could talk to him about anything. really anything. He was just, you know, he didn't make judgments of you. He didn't lay down the law. He wasn't that kind of a dad. He was very easygoing as a dad, but he was very practical and he had good advice. He always wanted to make sure I was working, had a job, which I appreciate now because, you know, you realize, you know, when you're being taken care of as a kid, you think it's always going to be like that, but it's not. And he was very practical and very wise.
What did he think of show business? What did he think of the just the business of it all? The rehearsing, the acting, is it ever something did he want to be that when he was a kid?
Always. He always wanted to be that. He was always working toward that end. But as far as the rehearsing and all, that's a good question. I remember a lot of people don't realize this. My dad did a lot of theater. He was on the road quite a bit when he was in between movies and TV. He was out here in the Midwest doing theater. And I went on the road with him a few times. I got to be in some shows with him. And he was just a real dedicated performer. He would rehearse. They would rehearse in, you know, we'd rehearse in Los Angeles. And then once we left Los Angeles and the director was no longer in sight, my dad would frequently redirect, you know, some of the actors that, you know, needed a little bit of help, or he thought, you know, some staging could be improved because the director was gone. And all of a sudden you get there and it's different stage than quite you've pictured it. So he would make adjustments. And he always wanted to make sure that the sound was proper. And that's real important because, you know, if people can't hear you, they're not going to enjoy your show. And sometimes, you know, he'd have to make a beef about things. And he had no problem doing that. And he was very particular. And another thing was, it's very important to what he called paper the house. When you come out and you do a show on the road, you have to get people to come in and so get the word of mouth going. So that was one thing. Some producers were not willing to do that. They didn't want to give away free tickets, but my dad always said, that's what you got to do. So he was very, very, very professional.
What was his career like in the beginning? Because he worked right up until the end.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like when he was in his 40s and 50s at the height of the Andy Griffith Show versus the last 10 years? I do remember, I wanted to write this down, because I saw Don with Tim Conway. They were doing a show. They were in Marion here, November 24th, 2002. And I think that was a packed house, if I'm not mistaken. I think 1,400 seats at the Palace Theater.
Mm-hmm.
So they played very well in the Midwest.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, it's funny you mentioned Tim Conway. I do talk about him in my show as well. Because when Disney had the foresight to pair them up, in the Apple Dumpling Gang, it started a new comedy team. They were fantastic together. And my dad loved Tim Conway. He said he was the funniest man he ever knew, which is really saying a lot because he knew just about every funny person and there was. But Tim has a different style of working. He's more ad-lib. He writes and he ad-libs. My dad's very well rehearsed. He used to just, you know, rehearse like crazy. But so for him to start working with Tim was a challenge. Because, you know, they get on camera and Tim would just start making stuff up. And so my dad had to kind of go with the flow, and he did learn to ad lib pretty well with Tim. And that really opened up some door, you know, just opened up a new way of working for him. And they were both funny, so they took turns giving punchlines. They were, you know, my dad, who's one of the funniest people on the planet, ended up being straight man for Tim Conway, which was pretty amazing.
Did he like stage work, movies, or television best?
I'm not really sure. I mean, he loved being on stage, but he didn't like traveling too much. So I would say not that.
Yeah.
I think he liked television best because television was, you got to know the people you were working with. They were familiar. They became like a family. And he loved that. He loved being close to people and having like, you know, like he loved the Three's Company, you know, group, the young kids, and John Ritter, of course. He and John Ritter were very close friends. And, of course, the Andy Griffith Show was like that, too. It was like a company of actors, and everybody got along so well because of Andy. Andy set a tone of friendliness and trust. So those were two great casts that he just enjoyed the heck out of.
What is it like to have a famous parent?
Well, these are great questions, by the way.
Thank you.
It's many things. One is, you know, it's just like your father. He's your father. And, you know, people say, what's it like having your dad for a father? And I'd say, well, I don't know. I don't have anything to compare it to, which I didn't. But so you sort of have to shut all the fame thing out, because if you think about, well, my dad's famous, then that's going to put a whole different spin on your relationship. So you kind of shut that all out. And in a way, you kind of forget that you have a famous father until you're out there in the crowds and people are reacting the way they are. But he was in a goldfish bowl, and I think it made him a little bit reclusive, you know, because people watch you, you know, and they're aware of you. And that happened to me, too, where I would be, you know, told that, you know, people were aware of me being the daughter of, and I didn't even know, you know, I never think about it. If somebody knows who I am before I'm aware of them, that always would surprise me.
Why did you decide to go into his business, show business?
Well, I was, you know, when I was a kid, I used to feed him lines. He would ask me to, you know, give him, feed him lines so that he could learn his lines for the Andy Griffith Show. And I would practice, you know, playing Aunt B. Andy, Barney, there's a big basket of fried chicken and pickles and cornbread. I want you to eat it all up. Don't leave a single crumb. I want everyone to be as plump as me. That was one thing I loved to do. But when I was, you know, feeding him his lines, he would say, no, 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 don't act them out. Just give me the line straight. So, but I just was bitten by the bug early. And I remember getting to go see him work on The Incredible Mr. Limpet. I think that's when I first got the bug really hit me hard. Was when I saw Carol Cook, who played his wife, the wife of the fish. And there's a scene where she has to give the glasses to the man, her husband, who has turned into a fish. So there's a scene where she's at the waterfront. She puts the glasses on the fish, but all you see, and I was there in person, was just put this glasses on a box of stuff. But from the audience, it's going to look like she put them on the fish. And I thought, wow, that's really magical that she made me believe that's a fish. And that's when I consciously first made my decision that I wanted to do this too.
Well, I was thinking today, he was on the Andy Griffith Show for 5 seasons, the first 5 years, nominated for 5 Emmys, won 5 Emmys. When you look at him as just an actor, if you're able to do that, how good was he?
It's amazing.
This is a tremendous man.
You know, even now, it's amazing to me how many actors today are just in awe of my dad. Jim Carrey, Conan O'Brien, Seth Green, I mean, Billy Bob Thornton, all these huge actors, they still admire him, and they grew up watching him and studying him. And it's really pretty remarkable that the fascination with my dad has just continued on past his passing. And that's pretty unique, I think. It's remarkable.
He goes on and on. This morning, when we were talking about having you on the show on an earlier program, everybody loves Don Knotts. It is a name that everybody knows. If you are a child today, maybe you know him from The Ghost in Mr. Chicken. If you are a senior citizen, you might remember him from Andy Griffith. Why does he endure when other great personalities like Jack Benny? You could ask a child who Jack Benny was, they're not going to know. You could ask maybe even some senior citizens who Jack Benny is, they might not remember. But Don Knotts, Andy Griffith, those are names people remember.
That's right. Well, also remember the nervous guy from the Steve Allen Show.
Absolutely.
People in their 80s, 90s will remember that too. The only group that isn't so sure about Don Knotts are the millennials. That's because they watch a different, they're on a different planet as far as entertainment. Unless they grew up here in this area or in the South, and then they watch with their parents. But, I think that I've kind of analyzed that. I think that the reason why my dad is so enduring is because so many people identified with him and still identify. You know, I get people telling me, my father looks like your dad, or my uncle reminds me of your dad, or something. You know, everybody sees something about themselves in Don Knotts, in his characters. And Barney Fife was just the perfect, you know, guy who just wanted to win. He just wanted to make good. He wanted to win. And even though he didn't have the goods, he had the ambition, and people can relate to that. You know, everybody wants to be a winner, and that's what Barney Fife did. And interestingly, I think that character really came from my dad as a child. You know, being a child, he was kind of picked on, and he wanted to be noticed. He wanted to have the glory, and so I think that Barney Fife is really deep down in my father's child in this character.
If you take the three characters, in my opinion, and I think everybody has their own opinion, that he is probably most remembered for, I'm thinking Barney Fife, probably Mr. Furley, mm-hmm. and I would say the character he played in The Ghost and Mr. Chicken. Every Halloween, you can mm-hmm. find that movie.
That's true.
Those three characters, all they're different, but they share attributes. They're unsure of themselves. They're kind of high-strung, I guess might be a term. How far was Don Knotts from that character?
As a person, you wouldn't know. You wouldn't even know. I mean, he was so quiet. He was gentle, quiet, kind, intelligent, very worldly. And he was, you know, interested in the news. You didn't see the jitters at all. Internally, he was jittery. But on the surface, you never saw any of that. And a lot of people were actually shocked when they meet him that how calm and quiet he was. But he was a genius, and he just created these characters. And that, like I said, was at his core as a child, you know. Yes, that was his core. But he kind of developed way beyond that and still kept that core within, you know, kept that core alive. Does that answer your question?
I'm with you. Well, I just keep thinking, you know, when the daughter or the son goes into the banking business, when their dad or mom's a banker, if they're very successful at it, it's kind of hard for them sometimes because they live in that shadow. Mm-hmm. You are this person's child. Mm-hmm. No matter how great and fantastic they are, mm-hmm. they're from this.
That's true.
Has that ever impacted you?
Definitely, definitely. I mean, I always felt like growing up that I had to represent my dad, and I always felt like I wasn't very important because they really want to know about my dad, and I always had that. And if I'd start talking about my dad like I do in my show, they'd always jump to questions like, how many pickles did Aunt Bee have in the pickle jar? You know, trivia questions like that I couldn't answer because I was a kid and I didn't know. But then as I grew older and then I started developing my own identity, I'm still kind of in that process right now of, you know, just develop, who is Karen Knotts? You know, I got to separate those two. And that's kind of why my show is called Tied Up in Knots, because I am tied up in that. You know, it's just remarkable how much you relate, you know, you're kind of forced into being this other entity, and then you kind of have to break out. You have to break out of that and find your own personality.
This might be a strange question, not coming from famous parents or a famous parent. Were you a fan of his? Do you look at it like that?
I am a fan. Yes, yeah. I am definitely a fan.
Yeah.
I watch those things over and over again, you know, just amazing. And of course, around the house, he was acting all the time too. And I remember that. And I remember him, like, his reactions, sometimes he would get emotional. He did still have an emotional side. And he would get very emotional and he'd you know, go off. One time I had a friend over, we were doing a scene in an acting class, and this friend of mine had to play a blind man. And my dad coached him on how to be blind, and he was just totally riveted by that. You know, he just totally brought that point home, like how to do this was so, made it so simple.
When a parent is no longer around, I know something a lot of people cling to are pictures, home movies. Well, Don Knotts is on at least every day somewhere. Are those looked upon like home movies? When you see him today, after he's been mm-hmm. gone a decade, mm-hmm. what do you see? What do you think?
Oh, no, those are not like home movies at all. Those are characters that he played. It was his acting. That was his career. But unfortunately, I don't have any home movies of my dad except for one little bit. But I think of my dad, I think of the memories as a father and just a lot of fun little memories, you know. But I still love watching all of his work. And there's one clip in my show that I show of another three clips of the Steve Allen days, the live television, the nervous guy. And those still crack me up constantly. I watch them all the time. So, yes, I am a fan.
What did he like best? If he were sitting here right now and I said, Don, what would you put in the time capsule of your career? What would he say?
Well, definitely Barney Fife.
Barney Fife.
Yes.
Why was it that for him?
I think it was just his masterpiece, you know, of all the things he did. And also the relationship with Andy was so special and all the people he worked with. And, you know, like it was a culmination of the childhood dream of all these, you know, characters you grew up with, and they created this whole alter ego and this whole world that's still living on today. It's so good. You definitely Barney Fife. And beyond that, I think some of the movies, and working with Tim Conway, I think those things too.
Did he like Mr. Furley? Was that something he enjoyed doing?
Oh, very much. That was a very different thing. I mentioned the challenge he had working with Tim Conway, because Tim ad-libbed a lot. With Three's Company, well, when they shot the Andy Griffith Show, it was done on film. It was like shooting a movie. So it was over the camera, you know, long shots, close-ups, all of that, all the different setups. But with Three's Company, by that time, they were shooting in front of a live audience and without a teleprompter on that show. They didn't use a teleprompter. So he had to not only get used to doing on camera in front of an audience and not having a teleprompter all in one. And he was quite nervous about that. But he got adjusted and he was fine with it.
I do want to let everybody know we're talking with Karen Knotts, the daughter of legendary actor, no other way to put that, Emmy Award-winning actor Don Knotts, who will be at the Ohio State University tonight in the Morrill Hall Auditorium, appearing in Tied Up in Knots, an evening dedicated to the memory of her father, 7:30 p.m., doors open at 7 p.m., tickets $10, general admission, $9 for seniors 60 years of age and up, $4 for students, grades K through 12, and that includes current college students. You talked about working with your father later in his life in stage productions.
Mm-hmm.
What's that like working with him? You talked about how he was on stage, he would direct behind, but how did that come about that you would work with him?
Well, he wanted to give me an opportunity because he knew I wanted to act, and so he brought me out there a few times, and it was really amazing to get to work with him because he was such a perfectionist. Like, I would usually only have a few lines or a small part, but he would coach me in those lines, and every single night he would listen to, you know, whether I was getting a laugh or not. And he'd say, hey, let's try it this way. Why don't you try tightening this up? Or why don't you try speeding that line up? Or why don't you try giving a look or whatever? And I would try everything he said, and everything that he said got a different reaction. And it was just amazing to see how his mind was constantly on that, constantly. And with the other actors, he didn't, you know, he didn't coach him to that degree. But he was, you know, he wanted me to learn as much as I could. One time I remember we were doing You Can't Take It With You in Kansas City. And I was playing the part of a drunk actress named Gay Wellington. And when we were in rehearsal, I thought, this would be so funny, I'm just going to fall off the couch. And I didn't tell anybody I was going to do it. And I did that. I fell off the couch, and I got a huge laugh. And the director said, keep it. And I thought, this is great. But it didn't occur to me until later that I was going to have to fall off that couch onto a hardwood floor every single night for 30 weeks. I had some bruised elbows, but I was really proud of myself that I got that business in.
I always hear, talk to a lot of actors over the years, and they talk about it comes from a shyness, mm-hmm. a bit of withdrawnness.
Mm-hmm.
Was that Don Knotts as well?
Oh, yes. He was very shy. He's very humble, you know, humble but confident. Humbly confident is what I call him. But yes, he was very shy person. But, you know, he had a persona as well that he could slip into if, you know, needed to. But yes, shyness was much a part of him. Mm-hmm.
Of course, in the 50s, he had Steve Allen. Mm-hmm. Great success. 60s was the Andy Griffith Show and start of a great movie career. Late mm-hmm. 70s, early 80s, had Mr. Furley and Three's mm-hmm. Company. The late 80s and 90s and into the 2000s, touring and doing things, but probably the least busy part of his career after the hits.
Well, that was because he came down with macular degeneration.
Oh.
And it caused him to be partially blind. And he was afraid to go out for, you know, accept parts because he couldn't really read. He could see, he had peripheral vision. And in those days, the treatment was laser straight to the eye. And that caused a lot of glare. And so he turned down a couple of roles, and because of that, he wasn't offered anything for a long time. Well, in the meantime, he adjusted and he found ways to work around that, but it took a while for the offers to start coming back again.
Did he turn down anything that he regretted? Any big thing that
No, they were television parts, mostly.
Television parts?
Yeah, I don't think he regretted it particularly, because at that time he didn't know what else he could do.
Right. What were those days like for him? Because this is what he loved to do. He mm-hmm. loved to work.
It was hard. It was hard for him. He didn't talk about it, but I knew what he was going through. I could feel it. And it was just a struggle for him. And not only that, but just the fear of going blind was a present fear. I had a bit of hypochondria anyway, as it was. But he managed to overcome that, and he started working again. And he always did a lot of voiceover work, so he usually got by on that too.
I remember toward the end of his life, he was doing On Golden Pond in certain places.
That's right.
And you wouldn't think Don Knotts in On Golden Pond, but I understand the play is a little different than the movie that we're all familiar with. But why would he take a role like? Did he like that? Were fans shocked when they would come to the show and Don Knotts in On Golden Pond?
I don't know if they were shocked, but he did explain to me that was a comedy as a stage play. So he was happy to take that role. It was a good role for him. You know, he liked plays where he could be funny, but there was also relationships and, you know, good reality to it. He enjoyed it very much.
The movies. Did he like the movie part of his career?
Oh, yes. Yes, he did. He loved that. He loved all of it.
Loved everything.
He did, loved everything.
What, you talked early on about his death being sudden. I remember you were on the Larry King show when he passed away. I think Andy Griffith was there and Joyce DeWitt and a lot of Ron Howard, I think, was on at that time. What he had been performing not too long before, had he not?
Yeah, he was doing voiceover work. And I think the last thing he did was Chicken Little. I'm not positive of that. But he was still doing voiceover work even right up to the end. And it was he did Robot Chicken. Yeah, that may have been actually the last thing he did. So he always worked, pretty much.
And it was just a sudden illness that...
He got, well, he had complications with his lungs. He had respiratory problems. He was always plagued with some respiratory problems. And then that eventually, when it turned into lung cancer, that's why he went so fast. It was because then, I don't know how it is now, but then lung cancer was pretty quick. There wasn't anything you could do about it.
Right.
So that's what happened.
Was he a smoker or anything like that?
He was, but he'd given it up.
Given it up by
he'd
that point.
He'd given it up many years before.
I remember that Larry King for a poignant reason, because when people work together, you think, well, they probably work together and they have a friendship, but that's where it ended. I remember hearing that Andy Griffith was at the hospital when this happened. How did that all come up? Did he know the end was near? Was that
a touching
moment?
They were in touch. They talked on the phone pretty much every week, their whole lives.
Really? That close?
Oh, yeah. They were close their whole lives. And Andy knew about it, so... And probably Francie called and let him know. And so Francie, that's my dad's third wife and his widow. And so, you know, Andy knew. He came down. He was there at the very end.
John Ritter, unfortunately, passed away very young, a few years before that. And I think the last thing that John had done, one of the last things, was an episode of Eight Simple Rules. And Don Knotts had a very quick cameo, just waking up in bed, and there he was. With John Ritter. What impact did that passing have on Don?
Oh, he was upset. I never really talked to him about it too much, but I know he was sad. You know, he and John were really close. So he was just sad and surprised, like everyone.
When he was, are you happy with the way he's regarded by the industry?
By the industry?
By the television and movie industry. As that guy, that funny character, that comedic actor, because he could do drama as well.
Well, I asked him about that one time. You know, I said, how come you never do dramatic roles, Dad? And he said, well, because I'm just so well known as a comedy actor. At one time, a director explained to him that if I cast you in this role, they're just going to start laughing when you come on the screen. And that's what happens, you know, as soon as he's seen and people just start laughing. So, but he never really, that wasn't really bothered him. He did one time a serious role for a friend of his. He did this show called A Good Look at Boney Kern. It was a 99-seat theater, a small theater in L.A., and he played a blind man. And it was very wonderful, wonderfully done, and he was great at it. But that's the only dramatic role other than a soap opera role he did in the 50s. Those are the only two dramatic roles that I know of.
Was there anything else in life that you wanted to do besides be an actress?
Well, I am also a librarian.
Oh.
I am still doing that. And I travel, and when I'm not on the road doing my show or stand-up comedy, I am a librarian.
How did that come about?
Well, he encouraged me. I was trying to get, you know, parts in shows and TV and stuff, and it wasn't really quite working. It's very hard to make it in L.A. It's very, very tough. So he suggested I go back to school and get a degree, and he said he would pay for me to go to library school, and that's what I did. And I'm really glad I did that because I enjoy it a lot. It's a good job. And it's still very relevant, even though some people think that libraries don't exist anymore because of the internet. That is not correct. They're still around.
Do you think libraries will survive this internet boom where people get Kindle? Why will they?
Well, libraries are they're democratic institutions, and they've always evolved over the years. They've always found a new place. They're very adaptable, and it's part of the whole democracy, free access, equal access, you know, First Amendment rights. And so people look to libraries, and even though there's the internet, there are a lot of things you can't get on the internet still. So libraries are still very valid, and I think they always will be.
When you're doing the job at the library, do you get those moments where you just want to be on stage, where you want to go do something? Is that your first love?
It is my first love. Yeah. Yes, it is. But I do talk about being a librarian in my act, too.
We talked about how the idea for this came about. How was it constructed, the show people will see
the
tonight?
Show?
Yeah.
Well, it just started off being a chronological thing. And the first part of it, I always felt a little more comfortable with because it just flowed more naturally. And then when it gets into part where it's more about me and my dad, it was harder. Because, you know, people have that natural connection to the Andy Griffith Show. But in the second half, it felt a little bit more segmented. But it took me a while, and I finally got that to where it's all smoothed out. Now it works beautifully, and I'm glad that I stuck with it because I love it now.
What do you hope to do with this show? It's touring right now, playing rooms. Where do you see it?
I see it as just continually touring. I think it's great. People from small towns and even big cities, this show really, really means a lot to people because they see their town reflected in my dad's career. And it makes people feel good because a lot of people, you know, they say, why can't we see shows like this on television anymore? Why aren't there characters like this on television anymore? And there's a fear that the small town way of life is going to become extinct, I believe. I mean, that's just my feeling. And so seeing my show and seeing my father's whole career kind of reassures people a little bit, I feel, and also gives them the chance to relive the wonderful work of my dad's.
Being a part of the entertainment industry and certainly being around it for a very long time, what do you make of this reality show, not make shows like that anymore atmosphere we live in?
Well, I think it's kind of sad that a lot of this kind of comedy is being ignored by Hollywood right now. It's just true character comedy. And it has sort of got this whole glibness to it, you know. And, I mean, every kind of entertainment is valid as long as people enjoy it. But I do feel they're neglecting this kind of humor. I don't know why. I just hope that we'll be able to get it going again somehow. But I'm going to keep on doing it regardless.
Were there things he would not do? Were there certain scripts, ideas, characters he would not play?
Yeah, but I mean, most of those things were not offered to him.
I was just thinking, I remember, the movie escapes me, but he played the kind of cranky TV repairman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Pleasantville.
Pleasantville, yes. Mm-hmm. And that was a little bit of a departure from the Don Knotts that we had all seen.
But that was also a part of him. He could be cranky. Every dad has a cranky side, and he had a cranky side, too.
Did he like that role?
Yeah, I think so. Uh-huh.
Did at the end of his career, was there anything that he still wanted to do that you know of?
Not that he ever mentioned to me. I think he was pretty satisfied. He never felt bad that he had been typecast or anything like that. He said that's his bread and butter, and he was glad that he was working. So I don't think he had any regrets. The only thing I heard him say, actually, this was in an interview, that he wished he could sing and dance. He would have liked to be a song and dance man because he was a great dancer in social occasions. So I think that's the only regret I ever heard him express.
Was he available? I mean, his career, I imagine, kept him very busy. Was he an available person in those big years, the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Very much so. I mean, he worked 12 hours a day, sometimes on The Griffith Show, but he always made sure that he'd come and say goodnight or be there for us in the weekends. And he was very much a home dad. And we never felt that he was ignoring us ever.
When it came to the people he worked with, we talked about Tim Conway. We talked about Andy Griffith. Those would have been his favorites.
Mm-hmm.
Those two.
Yes.
Do you think, are those your favorites when you watch him? That's who you like to see him work with?
Well, yeah. I loved, I also enjoyed him with Phil Silvers in It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. That was an amazing scene. He could play off of anybody, basically.
Yeah. If he were still around today, what do you think he'd be doing?
Oh, I think he'd be enjoying life. I think he had a lot of friends, and he had his wife, and he'd still be working and writing and doing creative things, and he had a very low-key life. He really didn't go out and have a big social life or party it up or something like that, but he had a very nice life.
You know, that's funny. When anybody is mentioned, especially in the context of a Don Knotts or people of that stature, they think, well, their life can be nothing like mine. They travel around
right.
in limousines, and it must be cocktail parties all the time and this
right.
sort of thing. What was his life like?
Yeah, you know, people think that, but, you know, entertainers or anybody that successful, their life is really a lot about working, being disciplined and professional. And so to have that kind of a lifestyle where you're working and you're so disciplined, you really have to economize. You can't go out running around and going to parties and all that stuff. You just don't have the time. And so he just had a very regular, like a life that anybody would have. Just, you know, having friends. He liked to play poker with his friends, played a lot of cards, and, you know, went out to plays, and that was just his life.
What kind of things do you like to do as an actress?
I like to do comedy.
Comedy.
I wouldn't even care if I never did a drama. I just like to make people laugh. It's really fun.
What is it about comedy that, they always say this, if you're a comedian, you can do drama very well, but people who do drama don't do comedy so well. What's your explanation of that?
I don't really know. I think you just you have to have a kind of a funny sensibility. It's not even about acting so much. It's like a certain sense of humor that you can create, and it's just a whole other like dimension, sort of in a way. I think that dramatic acting is really not that different. You know, it's just you're doing something funny, but you're still acting.
Is comedy all in the writing, the timing, the performance, a combination? How do you get those laughs? How do you know they're going to laugh?
Well, it is a combination of everything. Timing is really important. Timing is super important. I know my dad studied Jack Benny, who was considered the master of comedy timing. He really did, and you can see that. And if you compare the two, you can see that influence. So I think, yeah, a lot of times you don't know if it's going to work, like what I was saying before about how he would redirect. He was listening to the audience to see if they were laughing enough. And if he didn't think they were, then he tried a different way. So it's a lot about experimenting. It's timing. And then it's just having that sensibility of what's funny.
Who to you were the important people you met just because of your father as a celebrity in the world? Who did you like meeting?
I like meeting Sidney Poitier.
Oh, that great one. There, yeah.
I just begged my dad to take me to this party. I knew he was going to be there, and my dad finally said okay. And not that he wouldn't, but, you know, I guess he was trying to protect me at that time because I was at, you know, like my early 20s or something. And I also got to meet Mario Van Peebles at that same party. So, yeah, it was fun. And of course, Andy Griffith was awesome. He was like an uncle to me.
You know, Andy has just left us recently in the last, I think, 5 years. You were close to Andy Griffith. I mean, you obviously mm-hmm. knew him. What was it about him? Why was he so highly regarded? Still is.
He just had, he cared about people. He really cared about people. He, he treated people with respect, and he created this whole world, you know, Mayberry. He had a good business sense. That's one thing my dad didn't have. He had a good business sense, and he could always get, you know, a show on if he wanted to. And he also he was just very kind, and he could be kind of a tease sometimes. People talk about that about him sometimes. He liked to tease. But, he's just a great guy all around.
It's funny, again, talking about your visit with us today earlier on this morning, and one of the engineers around here, who was also an engineer in the 50s, was talking about playing Andy Griffith's What It was Football.
Mm-hmm.
How good a stand-up comedian would you consider Andy Griffith was? Or was that acting when he was doing that?
It was more storytelling.
Yeah. How good was... I mean, that really holds up. If you listen to that today, or Romeo and Juliet, or any of the things he did, those are great.
Yeah, they are great. They are great. But I think Andy was too big to do stand-up. He was too... I mean, his style was very over the top. And I don't think that would translate in stand-up comedy today. You know, but he just managed to be who he was. And then he was accepted, you know. And I remember as kids, we used to listen to... he had an album where he would tell the story about the Jack the Giant Killer. And my brother and I used to listen to that. We loved that story. It's the way he told it was so great.
I don't know if you remember this story, but if you do, I want you to tell it. Because it was a story of Ron Howard, who went on to become obviously a great director, was doing The Grinch with Jim Carrey.
Right.
And he loved your father.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess Ron brought Don to the set one day just to cheer Jim up.
Right.
Did Don Knotts realize he had that? Did he realize he was Don Knotts?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
He did. I mean, he was humble, but he also kind of knew, you know, sometimes he would be surprised, you know, but he wasn't conceited about himself or anything like that, but he knew that, he was great.
Yeah. He really was. He is well regarded to this day. When you see The Ghost and Mr. Chicken, I do want to talk a little bit about this. What do you think it is about that movie that holds up? The Ghost and Mr. Chicken.
I don't know. I just think it's, again, kind of a Barney Fife character in a bigger setting. And everybody can identify with, you know, fighting your fears and things like that.
We have about 5 minutes left here with Karen Knotts, and we thank her so much for coming in today. The daughter of legendary actor Don Knotts. Tonight, don't forget this, very important tonight, Karen Knotts will be at Ohio State Marion's Morrill Hall Auditorium, appearing in Tied Up in Knots, an evening dedicated to the memory of her father, famed actor Don Knotts. 7:30 p.m., 7 p.m., doors open. Tickets are $10 general admission, $9 for seniors, 60 and up, $4 for students, grades K through 12, and also current college students. And if you want to get a question in, maybe we'll slip one in if we have a few, well, we have 4 minutes, if you will, we have the time to get one in here. 740-383-9944. An evening dedicated to the memory of your father. Do you think of it like that, or is it a stage show?
Both. You know, I am going back in time when I tell the stories, and they are very real to me. So it is a... It's nice to, you know, I love acting out my dad, you know, as a person, because it does bring him back to me, and it's very nice. It's very special to be able to share memories. I mean, how many people can have the opportunity to share the memory of their parent with a whole audience of people that are enjoying it just as much as you are?
Is it hard to do the show with him being gone?
No. People ask me that a lot. No, I'm not grieving my father. You know, that's life. People pass on, you know. But it's nice. It's nice to be able to remember him in that way and to make, in a sense, making him live on past when he's gone. That's really special.
Do you have a favorite part of the show?
I like most all of it now. Like I said, it took me a while to even it all out, but now I really enjoy it so much.
Really what fun. What is something about Don Knotts we would not know? Nothing odd or anything, but just something we wouldn't know because we didn't spend days with him.
He really liked British comedy. He was a big fan of shows like The Staircase. I forget the name of that show. There was another show with John Cleese called Fawlty Towers that we got hooked on, and he really enjoyed that. And he loved anything British, and there was a store in Santa Monica that sold British things, and he loved to go there and shop, you know. So that's one thing.
Was it hard for him? I mean, obviously he got work, but was it hard? Did people always think of him as Barney Fife?
There's certain people that do, and that's what they relate to the most. And other people, it depends on the age. You know, some people never saw that show, and they saw only Three's Company, so that's what they think of him. And but some people just identify so strongly with Barney Fife. You know, let's face it, that is such a strong character, and so much a part of this part of the country and the South too. So yeah.
If your father could be in the front row tonight watching it, what would he think of this show?
I think he'd be really thrilled. I think he'd be hard to believe that I could put a whole show together about him like I did. He'd be impressed. I wish he could see it.
You know, I saw him do an interview with the Archive of Television. It's online, METV.com. And it seemed like he just did not like to talk about himself. They would ask these questions, and he was very short in his answers.
When he got to be older, like I said, he has had a respiratory problem. I noticed that, too. I was watching that same thing, and I noticed that, too. And he was not drawing breath as well, and that was part of it. And also part of it was, you know, he didn't really like to go back in the past. He lived in the present. He didn't care to go and reminisce that much about things. So that was another part of it. And he was just older. Didn't really enjoy interviews that much. Never did really like interviews all that much.
You know, why? I get that. Why do actors really not like to be interviewed?
Well, it's not acting. It's sort of probing in a way. Okay. You know, I don't mind it, but I like it. But I guess it depends on the person. You know, it depends on the actor.
I want to ask you a big question here as we wrap up. And again, I thank you for the time. This has been fascinating, and I can't thank you enough. And I want to give the information here, but I want you to think on this question for a second. How do you remember your father, and how do you hope people remember your father? And here's the information again. Karen Knotts has been the guest, by the way. The show is tonight, the Ohio State University Morrill Hall Auditorium. I believe seats are still available. Tied Up in Knots is the show, an evening dedicated to the memory of her father, Don Knotts. If you don't know that name, you've been living under a rock for 70 years. So I'm sure you know who that is, from Barney Fife to Mr. Furley to all those great movies and many stage performances. One right here in Marion 15 years ago, 2002, 7:30 p.m., doors open at 7, tickets $10, $9 for seniors, 60 and up, $4 for students, grades K through 12. And that is current college students as well. Before we go there, I do have another question. What is the audience usually made up of, age-wise, when you
usually an older crowd, baby boomers and over. And sometimes they bring their kids. You know, a lot of times people watch my dad's stuff as a family. That's nice.
How do you remember him?
Oh, just as an amazing person, a very kind, generous man, just somebody who was always giving to people and was always laughing, always finding something funny in life, and just all the things I mentioned, just, you know, a little bit, just a totally consummate dad.
And how do you hope the people who only know him from that box remember him?
Well, after they see my show, they're going to remember him as a full human being, not just a character, but as a man, as a father, and the person that he was. That's what I hope they'll remember, and they usually do.
That being said, does it ever... I don't want to say bother, but does it ever irk you that maybe people only see him as that jittery guy?
No, of course not. How else would they know, you know?
Yeah.
But that is why I do the show, so people can have the opportunity to see what he was really like.
Karen Knotts, you have been a delight.
This has been
an absolute pleasure. Karen Knotts, today on the Now program. We can't thank her enough. Show tonight, 7:30, Ohio State's Morrill Auditorium, right on Route 95 here in Marion. For this day, this is Scott Spears. Heading for the dugout.
WGH1071.com.
The Fahey Bank Charlie Evers Show every Wednesday and Thursday, 10:10 a.m. till 12 noon, and Friday, 1:10 p.m. till 3 p.m. on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM.
Meadows Lawn Care and Landscaping is a proud supporter of WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio. Telephone number 740-262-5638. Email meadowslawncare43302@gmail.com. Creating unique environments. Facebook, Meadows Lawn Care.
Hello, Christians. Stand by for music, humor,
and scriptural truth. My name is Paul Savage. Join me and my wife, Glenna Savage, right here on WWGH 107.1 FM for Heaven Express, live music, a program that lives in song and in scripture truth, also streaming live on the net at www.wwgh1071.com.